Jake White, the woman at the center of Evie Wilde's second novel, is very strong and very independent, and she needs to be because she's a sheep farmer on a remote English island. But Jake is also running away from her past in Australia, and as she tries to figure out who or what has been killing her sheep, the reader tries to figure what Jake is running from. All the Birds Singing is published by Pantheon. I'm very pleased that it brings Evie Wilde to our show today. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And congratulations. You were named one of Granta's best young British novels last year.
Mm-hmm.
This novel opens with Jake's discovery of a dead sheep, and it's not the first one to be killed on her farm recently. Does she have any clues about who or what is killing the sheep?
Well, I think she's got some ideas which aren't necessarily the right ideas. She's got a little bit of paranoia about the locals who she kind of doesn't spend all that much time with.
Well, it's safe to say this isn't exactly a bucolic novel. There's an air of menace from almost everything, the locals, people from her past. Were you aiming to create that atmosphere, kind of like a horror film?
Yeah, I think I'd say that was probably the one thing that I set out to do was to write something a bit spooky.
But also, can you set out to write a page-turner? Or does that just come this kind of story?
I think that came later on. I mean, I'm really pleased that people find it a page-turner. I don't think that's anything I had all that much control over. I just tried to make it as frightening and strange as I could.
Well, there are mysteries to be cleared up, and you want to know what they are.
Exactly.
The novel switches back and forth between the heat of Australia and Jake's past and the cold of England and Jake's present. Why did you make the contrast between those two parts of her life so high?
Well, they're places that I've spent a lot of time. And Australia, I spent a lot of time as a child. And the sort of woodland parts of England and the dreary drizzle, that again speaks very much of my childhood. And I think they're both places that that I kind of use to sort of mine for my imagination.
Well, you must have spent more time in England because you don't have an Australian accent. But how did that come about?
Well, my mother's Australian, so every second year we'd go and spend about 3 months in Australia. And it would be somewhere that really captured my imagination and that I dreamt about going back to. And it was a really important place to me.
Well, both of the environments you're writing about seem incredibly harsh.
Mm.
Australia isn't always incredibly harsh.
No, but it can be. I think the coming from England, which is a small island, and then feeling the huge expanse of space in Australia, that on its own can feel quite harsh, I think.
Well, a British novelist once said to me, the difference between the United States and Australia is your pioneers went into the Badlands and came out on the other side in California, in the Promised
mm-hmm.
Land.
Mm-hmm.
Our pioneers went into the center of Australia and never came out.
Yeah, exactly.
The only thing that these two places really have in common is sheep farming and the fact that the story is told from Jake's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Was the contrast something that you were aware of when you were a kid?
Yeah, I think that I grew up in quite a rough part of London, and I couldn't go outside without an adult. In Australia, I was let loose for the whole day, and I didn't have to answer to anyone. And you know, if I came into trouble, it would be my own fault because I'd poked a snake with a stick or something, and that was me being stupid. Whereas back in England, it was very much, you know, the outside world that was the worry.
Did you actually know much about sheep farming?
I knew absolutely nothing
about
sheep.
So this is something you had to do serious research
on. I did. I went and stayed on a sheep farm in Wales for a fortnight and talked to a lot of farmers, watched a lot of sheep being born and a lot of sheep being shaved.
At first, there aren't many clues to either of the two mysteries in the novel. The first is who or what is killing the sheep, and the other is what exactly happened to Jake back in Australia. One of the first clues we get about Jake's past is that there are scars on her back.
Mm-hmm.
How much does that really tell the reader?
Well, I think scars are very telling in a way. Anyway, you know, any scar you see has a story behind it. But really, for Jake, they're just something that remind her every day of the thing in her past that she tries very hard to forget about.
You dole out the clues and the information in a way that's similar to a thriller's pacing. Do you think of this novel as a thriller?
I don't tend to think of whatever I write as any kind of genre. I think it's great that it gets called a thriller, purely because that means it might sell a few more copies. But really, to me, it's a story, and it's a story that I knew I wanted to be frightening, but that's as far as I got.
Well, thrillers don't get the kind of response that this book has generally. It was published last year in the UK, named one of the best books of the year by The Guardian, The New Statesman, The Independent, The Observer, and also in Australia by the Sydney Morning Herald. And every reviewer talks about the level of observation in the writing. I'm assuming that that was a key factor in your decision of how to tell this story.
Yeah, I think observing things quietly is very much part of my nature. I was ill as a child, and I think possibly that kind of meant that I was much more much quieter than my friends, and I just sort of sat and watched and took stuff in, and I don't know if that has anything to do with it.
And you've created a character who is also kind of withdrawn.
Yeah, she's not unlike me.
Although I hope that your past isn't as traumatic as hers.
It's not quite as gritty.
From the start of the novel, we know that Jake is physically very strong, but as the novel goes on, we find out just how psychologically fragile she is. Do her suspicions tip into paranoia at times?
I think so. I mean, really, it's for the reader to work out. There are so many different elements affecting Jake. And part of it is definitely her paranoia, her fear that the past will repeat itself, that she'll have to flee again.
Well, is the line between suspicion and delusion interesting to play with as a writer?
Absolutely, it's a lot of fun to play with a narrator whose mental state you're not all that sure about.
My guest is Evie Wyld, W-Y-L-D. Mm-hmm. Her latest novel, All the Birds Singing. The first novel, After the Fire, A Still Small Voice, which won the John Llewellyn Reese Prize, also featured characters who were retreating from the world in order to recover from it. That's obviously a theme that intrigues you.
It is. I really enjoy looking at a person on their own against a landscape. I like how when you're alone and you know that nobody's looking at you, that you behave in different ways, you move in different ways, you speak to yourself in a different way.
In her case, she has to speak to herself because she doesn't trust him. But there's really only one character and her dog that she seems to trust at all.
Yeah, that's true. I think there's something I think Americans have this as well, their relationship with their pets, that they superimpose a personality on the pet. And, you know, I'm a very dog person, so I find it hard even to say that I believe that my dogs are real human beings. So I think it's just a person who is like yourself, really.
And the dogs throughout this novel are as much characters as the humans.
They are, yeah.
There's also the sheep, of course. We learn that Jake ran away from a man named Otto in Australia, but for most of the novel, we don't know why. But she's convinced he's going to come after her.
She is. I think Otto is a huge trauma in Jake's life. And I think she has post-traumatic stress from living with him.
Oh, but he's the person who taught her about sheep farming.
He is, yeah. And I very much wanted there to be, about Otto, something that implied that he's not 100% monster. I'm totally uninterested in characters who are monsters, who are certain either way. And I wanted to show that he was at one time a perfectly decent man, but he has made decisions that have led to him behaving in very bad ways.
Well, both in Australia and in England, Jake lives in a remote world that's dominated by men, but she seems very skittish around men. Or is she just skittish around everybody?
I think she's skittish around men in particular because of the experiences she's had and because of looking back on those times.
But couldn't she then put herself in situations where she'd be around more women and fewer men?
I guess she could, but she doesn't know all that many women. I mean, she goes to these far out places. She's a woman with a large stature, and she does at one point in her past spend time with women, but it's not in a particularly savoury way.
She's also almost tactical when she's in conversation. She notices body language a lot. These are protective mechanisms that she's developed?
Yeah, I think that feeling of not being quite grounded to the conversation you're having, of slightly feeling like you're floating above it and not experiencing it as it happens is part of Jake's problem, is that she is unpicking everything and finding double meanings behind everything.
Your language can be quite spare, mm-hmm. and sheep farming doesn't seem all that easy, rather austere.
the
topic
job.
Fits in with the way you write, or did you develop a voice specifically for this book and the topic at hand?
I think the voice kind of came almost last in the writing of the book. I was interested in the action more than anything else to begin with. I was interested in the ghost stories and what was in the woods and her past in Australia. And then towards the end, this kind of staying on the sheep farms and seeing what a desperately lonely job it can be. It really kind of brought the voice down a level, I think.
Well, who is she talking to? I mean, she doesn't seem to be addressing a reader at the same time that is first person.
I suppose it's talking to herself. Mm-hmm. I think it's, she's aware that these things have started to happen perhaps because of the memories that she's wadded down that are coming to the surface. So the deaths of the sheep are kind of, it's like things reaching ahead. And I think she's trying to unpick her life and trying to work out where it went wrong and what she could possibly do to untangle it.
At a certain point, the Australia narrative moves backward in time as the English narrative continues to move forward. Did you write the novel chronologically and then break it up, or did you write in the fragmented timeline that the reader experiences?
Sort of neither. I write very messily, so I started right in the middle, and I worked out both ways with both timelines. And it wasn't until I'd written about 60,000 words that I...
60,000 words?
Yeah, that I could print it out and kind of work out what I was going to do with the structure, if it was going to be a linear thing or how it was going to happen.
Well, it turns out to be a rather slim book, so you edited it down lot from 60,000 words.
It's about 70,000 words now.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Well, there are different ways that people approach novels. Some start off with a general sense of where they want to get to. Others sit down, like Michael Ondaatje. It sounds you're more like him. And he says that his mind is a blank slate every day, and then he writes, and then after the first draft is completed, he looks and sees what he has.
Yeah, I think I very much think on the page. I know a lot of writers who think for a long time before they write, and I can't do that. I think in a totally different way on the page.
I'm not going to go into some of the other characters, Don and Lloyd, but they all present both positive and negative things for Jake. Why did you name her Jake?
I wanted her to have a name that was solid and that wasn't pretty. I think,
but it's a man's name.
Well, it's sort of both back home, and I think I wanted it to be something a little bit along the lines of a boy named Sue. You know, mm-hmm. I wanted her to have not been the pretty little girl at school called Isabella, basically.
I'm assuming you're working on another book.
I am, yes. I'm working on a graphic novel which comes out in the UK next year.
A graphic novel? Who's with you as the illustrator?
No, with a good friend of mine as the illustrator, luckily.
Evie Wilde will be at the House of Speakeasy Literary Cabaret at City Winery, along with other writers, and me tonight at 7:30. For more information and tickets, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. She'll also be reading and signing books at McNally Jackson tomorrow at 7, and giving a talk at the Darien Library in Connecticut tomorrow at noon. For details on all of these, go to our show page at WNYC.org. She has won the John Llewellyn Reese Prize, the Betty Trask Award, and has been shortlisted for the Orange Award for New Writers, the International Impact Dublin Literary Award, the Commonwealth Writers, and the Custon Novel Award, the book All the Birds Singing from Pantheon.